August 6th, Economic Development Planning, Education, Employment, Arts, and Agriculture Committee meeting to order. It's 6:10 PM. Clerk Mueller, can you call the roll, please?
Absolutely. Chair Sperry.
Here.
Deputy Chair Litt.
Here.
Legislator Clinton. Legislator Corcoran.
Here.
Legislator Hewitt.
Here.
Legislator Stewart. Legislator Ball.
Here.
You have 5 members present. Great. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Legislator Litt, will you lead us in the pledge?
Yes, I will. Please stand. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I just want to remind everybody on meeting structure, priority is given to committee members for discussion and questions. Resolution sponsors are also given priority if they're present, and it's up to the chair's discretion to open up the conversation to non-members. The first thing we need to do is an approval of the July 2nd meeting minutes.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Great. The next thing we're going to do is have a presentation from Executive Director Forstrom from Cornell Cooperative Extension on the Ulster County 2025 budget request.
Hello, everybody. I think I had 10 county legislators with us last week who were seeing firsthand sort of impact that we provide to our county, which was really, really exciting. We were all a little bit happier than we are right now because we were drinking amazing milkshakes and listening to really cute kids talk about goats and such, right? I did want to talk to you about a 2025, our budget presentation and proposal, and introduce you to some folks that I also would like to get you to get to know at some point. So I'll be introducing them kind of in time with the Eastern New York specialists that we have here with us. We rolled in really thick today, so we're taking a lot of space. All right, so let's see. We have a story to tell. If I can get up, I'm going to put it on. So I'm going to go first. Fun. Okay, I have an origin story for you all. So Cooperative Extension. When we say Cooperative Extension, we are talking about 3 different kind of governmental structures that come together. So federal, state, and county. So our origin story is heavily kind of based in this idea. At one point, it was envisioned to be, I swear I couldn't for that thing to say 33.33, so they're actually all a third. The idea would be that funding sources would come from federal, which is Smith-Lever dollars, our state 224 dollars, and county dollars. So this was sort of, at our genesis, the grand idea behind Cooperative Extension. If you were here with me in May, I'm going to show you a very busy graph that I'm not going to spend so much time on, but that explains our current funding structure. So before I put it up there and distract you all, I did talk about it pretty at length in March that we now have over 40 grants and contracts that we work with. That is more employees than we currently have. We have been, I think, wildly successful in leveraging lots of different funding sources to bring into the county, so much so that we're currently, for every dollar of taxpayer money that comes to us, we bring $14 of services back into the county. So this next very busy graph that, sorry, does look like an eye exam, explains some of those myriad other funding sources that we have currently to date at this particular point. So in the landscape of all of this sort of funding structure to this funding structure, I will say for many, many years, our governmental funding structures, and I will say the county is outperforming your state and your federal peers by far, but have remained level or have decreased, which has led to kind of increasing squeeze on our governmental dollars because we have talented staff that we feel strongly about giving at least a 3% cost of living raise, particularly in years when cost of living is much higher than that. So, as a retrospective about our funding, Smith-Lever is our federal funding dollars. So this is the amount that we've received in the last 4 years from our federal funding dollars. So we went from 19 in 2020, 19,604, down to last year, 12,371. All of these numbers are adjusted for inflation. That equals a quarter of a percentage of one of our budget for the year. Our state 224 funding, which is a function of our county dollars. So the more county dollars we receive, the more state dollars we receive. So there is a correlation between state 224 and the county appropriation that we receive. This is our number for the last 3 years. So 96,833 down to in 2024, 25, 83,680. That represents 1.9% of our overall budget. And Ulster County, you are doing much better at 7.9% of our overall budget. But you will also see, now this one, I was able to get my hands on numbers much more quickly than I could for state and federal, so I was able to do it as a 30-year retrospective. But if you look at adjusted numbers from 1992, our 30-year, over $1 million we were receiving from Ulster County government, down to the generous $371,315 that we received last year. But it has been a kind of swiftly kind of downward trend for all of these governmental funding sources. So I do want to talk a minute about the impacts that we have, because we offer extremely good value for your dollar. And a lot of that is because our government benefits do flow through Cornell, so our indirects are always very, very reasonable. And we leverage an enormous amount of volunteer hours, and that really helps us to have big bang for our buck for the monies that we receive. So I want to talk a minute about Cornell in Eastern New York, and with permission, would love the opportunity for the specialists to introduce themselves. So Cornell in Eastern New York, these are our regional agriculture teams. They work in commercial horticulture. We have 15 different specialists that work in 17 counties, essentially from a little bit further south all the way up to Canada, essentially. They really help us to leverage the big grants, things like USDA and other large grants, and they are specializing in how we are growing fruits, vegetables for commercial horticulture, and how we're going to deal with all the impacts of climate change, different kinds of pests coming into our region, and how we are going to keep modernizing our agricultural systems. With permission, can I let this team introduce themselves? So I'll start with Dan.
Sure. Dan Donahue. I'm your regional tree fruit specialist, so I work with the apple industry and the stone fruit industry here in the Hudson Valley, and of course, Ulster County is the largest tree fruit producing county in the region, so I spent a lot of time.
And I'm Teresa Rusnak. I am a vegetable specialist with the Eastern New York team, and I work with the conventional and organic vegetable growers here in the Hudson Valley, beginning farmers, multi-generational farms. And I'm also a resident of Ulster County for the past 35 years.
I'm Ethan Groberg. I'm a vegetable specialist on the team and a Kingston resident. I've been on the team for almost a decade. I work in Orange County, but also extensively in Ulster County, especially with the Spanish-speaking community, which is a very large, fast-growing kind of owner-operator population that we're encountering.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jeremy Schuster. I'm the viticulture extension specialist, and for those that don't know what viticulture is, I work with wine grapes and table grapes. Ulster County is the second largest winery and vineyard county in the region, with over 30 farms and almost 200 acres under vine. So I support growers throughout from planning to marketing.
You like your wine and your vegetables and your fruits. These are our folks who make sure that we are getting high quality yields out of Ulster County and beyond. So,
Melanie, can I say one thing?
Yes, please.
I'm Jake from Ulster County Soil and Water. The sole reason why I'm here is to support TC of Ulster County. We're a very valuable and close partnership. I really enjoy working with CCE. We partner with a lot of conservation planning. They help us greatly with even with educational events, with their soil health and no-till event. Real pleasure to be here and to support you guys.
We always love seeing you, Jake, and I have even a photo of our soil health field day.
What?
So, yes. So, just
spoiler alert.
I wanted to surprise them with it, but since there are actually two Cornell interns who are working with us this summer, so I also wanted to just kind of talk about that Cornell connection. Up until this point, our county gets costed a share of of participating in Eastern New York. That share is varied every year. And this year it was about $93,000 that gets costed out of right from our budget. So these are some of the impacts of the Eastern New York team. So, and keep in mind that for each one of these numbers, you may have a grower who works with hundreds of people, right? So the numbers essentially are already impressive, but if you really think about the number of people that are truly impacted by the numbers that have been provided to us by the Eastern New York team in this region, it goes well beyond what you're seeing on this particular slide. So I'd also like to explain the importance of local agriculture, because the thought is not that our regional teams would ever replace the need for local agriculture. So that was our soil health field day that was completed in partnership with Soil and Water and many of the other vibrant partnerships that we have. This was at Walk Hill View Farm, which if you ate corn at the fair last week, they did provide us with all of the corn freshly picked from the same day. So our local ag department is four different, very hardworking individuals, including Christian, who heads up the team. So Christian Malfatsky is also here. And so our focus is on the areas that we don't have specialists from Eastern New York that we're paying for. So that's things like ag marketing and economics, community horticulture, and that's mainly through our Master Gardener program, field crops, livestock. And I said partnerships because in case I'm day 9 of 9 working, so in case I forgot to mention Jake, I was going partnerships. Mm-hmm. Soil and Water, we have a lot of vibrant partnerships, both through the Ashokan Watershed Stream Management Program and our ag programs, and also regenerative ag, such as the Soil Health Field Day and the no-till drill demonstration that was happening in this particular picture. I also want to mention from this, you know, our master gardeners provide, so when we're looking at sort of these impacts, and this is the Hudson Valley Grain School, also want to just take a minute to acknowledge that Christian has statewide leadership in malt and barley, and he helped to run the Malt and Barley Conference last year. So we really are leaders even within the state for the within our ag department. So this Hudson Valley Grain School was very well attended, and we have a pretty good specialty going in field crops here in Ulster County. 145 programs. That's what we can do when we have 86 master gardeners working with us who donate $100,000 worth of their time and energy that is given of them to receive additional educational kind of programming and be able to give back to the community. So just in Ulster County, our local ag department has provided this many programs within the last year. I will also say at this point, our local ag program is completely funded by Novo dollars. So that has been a blessing, and it's always one that makes us a little nervous as well, because should the table ever turn, we would have a real situation on our hands for figuring out how we are going to continue to support our local agricultural programs. Up to this point, they've been very generous, and in fact, I'm meeting with them next month, and we're all also be doing an increased ask to make sure that we are taking care of local ag. So, despite the somewhat pessimistic, funding that I've been presenting, we have really, really amazing things happening. So this was just last week at our calving demonstration. We have a club that just keeps expanding. They had 10 new members coming up. I think Legislator Corcoran said he helped deliver a calf, maybe, as I was talking to him before. So this group just keeps growing. We had the biggest livestock auction program we've ever had. We had 14 youth participating, learning how to grow livestock within our livestock auction program. So there's plenty, that's part of the, we've never been able to fully fund an animal science position or an animal educator position. And so one of the hopes is that if we can figure out where to get some of our funding correctly situated, that we can also continue to invest in our volunteers who are providing over $226,000 worth of volunteer hours in educating our youth. Let's see. We also had an open swine show. I'm sure Mr. Litz was excited about that, Legislator Litz. And that was
that's
the first
number one and number two.
Right. True. That was the first open swine show I've ever seen at Ulster County Fair, so I was pretty excited, as well as 4-H youth participating for the auction. Okay. So I also wanted to give you just a picture of the comparatives of what other CCE received within our region. Dutchess currently receives $0 as an allocation. They do receive about $1 million in contracted services. They have been at the brink of a lot of not great things over the course of this year because of their lack of county allocation. So it's really been, for me, a story that we need to be telling, that without an allocation, even when there's money in grants and contracts, there's a really critical place for a county allocation and supporting your local ag programs. I did not hear back from Putnam and Westchester in time, and they also have fairs going on, but this is the allocation received from the county for each of these different CCEs in our surrounding area. I also want to make a note, because budgets are obviously very different based on different counties and different populations, so I also did it as an allocation as a percentage of the full total county budget. So you will see that Ulster is a bit on the smaller side as an allocation of a percentage of county budget. So, for example, Orange County gets about almost $2 million a year from their county government. Their budget is about twice as big as ours, but about four times the county allocation in that particular case. So our ask for the coming year is the modest 3% cost of living we've been asking for the last year that I've been here. And we are also asking if the county would be willing to consider contributing to our Eastern New York share, which we have a rough estimate for next year of what that's going to be of $96,000, $96,592. There is a little bit of a wild card in that the ag census just came out, and that does get recalculated every few years, so we're not sure if it's going to be exactly that. It may be higher than that, but this would remain our ask no matter what those numbers end up being. So as a comparative, our CCUCS this year was about $371,315, if I'm not mistaken. So love that picture, by the way. And so, like I said, we offer amazing value for taxpayer dollars. We're able to bring lots in for investment that comes to us. We don't ask for freebies, but we have been essentially dying death of a thousand cuts of very level or decreased funding in almost all of our historical funding sources. And so we really are trying to right-size our budget, figure out how we can sustainably fund programs that are as critical to our future and our food as agriculture within our county, and then figure out how to work even more closely with our Eastern New York peers. Not mentioned here, also the Highland Lab has received some additional funding, and we're always in conversation with them about how we can all be working together better to better communicate what we're learning about impacts of climate change and how we can continue to be amazing food producers here in Ulster County. So I believe that was it for me, and I'm happy to open the floor for any questions that folks may have.
I would ask if anybody on the committee has any questions first.
I have one quick question.
Sure.
I heard that statistic before. By the way, thank you for, I saw you at the fair. I was busy with my grandkids, but
yes.
Thank you for your.
But
the $1,
yeah.
Which turns into $14.
Yeah.
How does that math come to?
So we have a $5.1 million budget, so with a $371,000 allocation, it's a pretty straight division kind of one, and all of those, we don't get the state dollars if we don't get the county dollars, right? So with the county allocation comes the federal or the state funding, as well as some of the Smith-Lever dollars. That's a little bit more tied up in campus. We are then able to write grants and contracts to bring in much of the rest of that value. About $1 million of our budget is fringe, $1.2 million is fringe. So that is calculated in the cost of our budget as well. So instead of, you know, our indirect costs are 20% of our usually what we charge for indirect costs, we are able to keep it that low because of New York State benefits going through Cornell University to us, which also makes us very good value for our dollar.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I don't know why. Sorry. I'm like, you are the chair.
Thank you for this. Your graph showing the federal dollars declining over time and the state dollars declining over time.
Yeah.
So I have a question about that and a related question about what you just mentioned, which is grants and contracts, yeah. Which I imagine are service contracts that you bid on, somewhat like a grant.
Yeah.
So on this graph for federal funding, is it declining like this because the overall offerings are declining, or is there any change in the amount of application materials that are going in from Cornell Cooperative, or the percentage of funding awarded for what you request? And the same question on the state. And then if you can add in the piece of where the, I mean, it looks like between this graph and the next graph and even the county graph that most of the funding would be in that other graph, in that other category, grants and contracts. And so if you can give us some information about that.
Sure. So federal remains, I will say, the most mysterious to me because that all flows through campus. And each year they simply let us know what amount we will be receiving from Smith-Weber dollars. It was in actual numbers, it was $16,000 for many years, and then we're adjusting for inflation in all these graphs. So it then went down to $12,000 more recently. They said we're going back down to pre-pandemic numbers. I'm still learning. I'm about a year and a half into this role about the politics of how federal flows through Cornell to us. My understanding, USDA NIFA has had a really hard couple of years. They lost about 80% of their staff when they moved from D.C. to the middle of the country, so that they're in a significant rebuilding period. So I think part of it is that it's been hard to figure out with leadership how can we revitalize what was once supposed to be a very vibrant partnership with the federal government, really pulling their weight in terms of that third of cooperative funding. So with state 224 funding, we've been at about 6 million statewide for some time. That usually ends up being 4.2 through the legislature and then an additional appointment from the governor in the last few years. Senator Hinchey has sponsored that bill for the last at least year. But that also has remained relatively stagnant. So there's not been an additional ask. At the county level, we really are at this point begging our administration to say, we'll have to start, we need to retain our talented staff. And so if we get level funded, that's less money every single year, right? Because we need to try to retain our very talented staff. So 3% is sort of the minimum. So we've been getting a lot of that level funding. For state funding, really over for 20 years, I think we've had somewhat stagnant state funding. So, and state funding is a function. It's a complicated formula. It's probably not one I could repeat right now, but I am happy to provide it at a future date. But the more a county gives, the more we receive from state 224 dollars. So there is an incentive to giving more at the county level because we do then get more at the state level.
And that's just automatic.
That's on your report.
Contracts and grants?
Contracts, so NOVO is $350,000. Hold on, I have a slide. Let's see. So we have some money that we cost where we're in charge of the business functions of seven different counties. That's also something that Cornell has been offloading. So we get some shares from other counties because we have to pay the employees who are running the HR, IT, and finance functions for a seven-county region. So I'm also in charge of that. They pay part of my salary, so that's considered part of our shares. State other, which I'd have to drill down, is $162,000. Private is $404,000. Regional is $268,800. So that would be the SBN, that Shared Business Network. Other government is $2 million. Much of that is the fringe that I said was 1.2. But we also do have other governmental contracts through OCFS, usually at times, County Department of Health, other regional climate resilience work for sure through municipalities. So I have all these numbers in different format. I know this graph is very hard to see. My kids that were presenting last week would chide me about it, and they very well should.
The students have best of the best.
And the total rough figure for your annual budget is?
The what?
Total rough figure for your annual budget?
$5.1 million. $5.1 million, that's our annual. A Shoken Watershed Stream Management Contract is a big one that funds that program. So it's, you know, we get a 20% indirect, which helps us run the program, and I can assure you, we usually donate some in kind too when we're having to deal with contracting and with DP. So,
legislator Hewitt.
Legislator Holland asked my primary question, but where is your biggest increases in your fund?
increases in funding are not happening. So that's really, that's the problem, right? So our costs keep going up. Many of you are fighting very hard with utilities, et cetera, but utilities keep on going up, rent keeps on going up, cost of living keeps going up, and our revenues really have not. So the biggest funding sources right here. Unfortunately, also, as these costs keep going up, then when we're running something like the shared business network, we have to cross that to other counties and so we're really working pretty heavily with Cornell at this point to say we really need and want more help on the administrative business side of things. What we love to do is program. What we want to be spending our money on is program. But legal fees are going up for many of us. You know, we have to, it's become quite a litigious culture, and there's a lot more support in that. So I was on a call today that was asking Cornell to please update our 2003 policies, which is the majority of our policy manuals. So we're doing a lot of working with Cornell and really help them to understand what our realities are on the ground. Sometimes a bit detached. Go ahead.
In that light, is there anything that you can do in terms of sustainability? You rent your office space, so you're not in charge of that.
Right.
And so the cost of that is probably not under your control, although you haven't presented it as going up. So you have primarily staffing expenses.
Yes, $2 million of our $5 million is personnel costs.
Is there anything that you can see that you can cut back on, given that you don't want to cut back on staff either in number or in salary?
So I think one of the main reasons I'm here is because the main thing we can cut back on is program, because our staff are so overworked at this point. Because if we keep on not being able to increase our staffing, as funding remains the same, like they're stretched very, very thin. Many of them are working on multiple grants and contracts all at the same time. They have the stress of wondering and hoping if that grant's going to be continued. We are not getting paid in a timely fashion, particularly from some New York State departments. And so we have major cash flow issues at times when our payments don't come through. It's one of these things where it seems like a lot of these costs keep trickling down to the little guy who are the least equipped to handle those sort of delays. So the reality is we're at the point where if we can't right-size our budget, we're going to have to start cutting programs, and we really don't want to do that. We know the value they bring.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions from the committee? Director Doyle?
I don't have a question, but I would like to thank the state.
Yes.
For full disclosure, I represent the county executive on Cornell's board.
Yes.
And what I would say to you is that think of this as an organization that essentially does more than it's asked for on a repeated basis. And think of your contribution is that the only reason they can do that, if you think about how the grant sources work, is because of the core funding that the county gives. And to the extent that core funding is essentially not keeping up with the need for that support, for that support, particularly for the administrative staff and the professional staff, you really need to take a hard look at that in terms of the ability to do that. And the fact that it's matched with the state level is really critical. I would also say that we don't take enough advantage of the organization's expertise, and we should think about how we can take more advantage of it. The numbers that you see here relative to the people that they contact has no way that it's representative to the impact it has on the individual or on the community that they serve.
So you are asking for a 3% increase from last year to this year?
For the CCUC portion, and then asking to, with assistance, cover our Eastern New York regional share that we pay directly out of some parts of our budget that we cobble together. So that's the sort of the additional $96,000 ask.
So you made a point earlier that the decrease is happening because the cost of living is going up faster than what your increases are from us, right?
Yes. From you, and you're doing more of your work than the federal and the state, but realistically, most of our funding has been level. So it is kind of one of these death by a thousand cuts kind of.
I guess my point is that 3% seems like it's below the cost of living increase that's going to happen this coming year anyway.
Yes.
So it seems like you might be asked one ask for.
Thank you. That's appreciated. If we could get Eastern New York our share of that, because realistically right now we're paying it through indirects, which is not a sustainable way to pay for actual direct programs and services to our commercial port program. So that's really the big one that we need to get right-sized. We have $30,000 projected budget both last year and this year. Last year we did come out ahead. This year we seem like we're okay at the moment, but there are a lot of other costs that are building up, so we certainly could be in a deficit budget this year.
Legislator Hewitt?
Do you know if the county is able to help you dislodge more federal funding?
I would love to talk about that, and I'd love to get strategic about that, too. Some of it is just the politics I don't understand well enough yet, because I've also heard a lot of people say, well, if we rock the boat too much, that we might lose all of our federal funding. And I, again, that's just an area where I'll just be transparent that I don't know enough yet. So I would love to be in conversation about that. I do think we play a critical role, especially in disseminating a lot of the things that are coming out through federal. So I think it's in everyone's best interest that we help figure that out, and I would love to do that.
I'd love to help.
Yeah, I think that's a longer-term conversation looking down the road, especially as we think more about perhaps the expansion of the ag coordinator position and working in consult with the other organizations and entities that are at the table. So, well, thank you so much for your presentation and being here, and thank you guys for coming and being supportive and introducing yourselves. And Jake, it's always a pleasure to have you here. Yeah.
Don't tell
him that. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right. And is it okay if I share a PDF of the presentation?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So I have a PDF of the presentation, which I'll share. I'll have Clerk Mahler share with you guys. Mm-hmm. At her. Mm-hmm.
It's a trap.
Thank you. Okay. By the way, it's confirmed with Jake that, Jake, while you're here, I'll just mention that Ulster County Soil and Water District will make a similar presentation in September. Yes. Get some rest. Congrats on a good fair. Loved my milkshake. All right, moving on to the next item on the agenda. So we have resolution number 168, which is adopting proposed local law number 1 of 2024, a local law amending Article 3, hotel and motel room occupancy tax of the code of the County of Ulster in relation to the determination of taxable rent. The resolution was referred back to our committee on during the May 14th legislative session. Proposed amendments were included in the committee's June resolutions packet, but not yet adopted by the committee. Legislator Nolan had requested a postponement in June. There were no updates in July and postponed again. It is my understanding that the occupancy tax working group met today. Is there an update from Deputy Chair Litz or Legislator Nolan if the resolution?
Yeah, the same update from each of us. The working group received additional information from the two largest venues that would be affected by this law, and that information confirms the prior information that we had received and extended it. So the working group is of the impression that the amendments that we proposed but have not yet been adopted are the ones we would like the body to receive. So we'd be looking to have this committee adopt those amended language tonight and take a vote on this. We have feel that the work that we did in preparing this has been confirmed by the additional information.
Can you just tell us what the additional information asked for was and how it was confirmed?
We sent a list of 13 additional questions to these venues during the busiest part of their year, and they got back to us within a week with more detail about the expenses so that we could confirm the percentage of the expenses that are related to lodging and everything else, which is called board in the law that we have. And we originally felt that a 20%, 80% split lodging to board would more accurately capture their expenses than the prior max category. Their additional information shows that very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
We also ask about whether or not they'd experienced any adverse effect from the increase in the occupancy tax from 2% to 4%. It's a little hard to gauge just in 1 year, but there's some worrisome signs. And each venue who received those questions separately reported that in slightly different ways, but in ways that kind of confirm each other. They also gave more detail about why it is that a figure that is paid for by the customer would affect them. And that has to do with the fact that the customer gets a credit card bill that just has one number on it. And some customers might care about whether it was tax or whether it was for a purchase, but for most, it's the bottom line. So I think they gave us a lot more information about the way that their business operates and about the impacts. This just came in, and not every member of the working committee has had a chance to review it, but we felt like we had enough with what we were seeing today to ask to move this out of committee. We're looking for ways that we can make that additional information and any prior information available to some additional members of the legislature without affecting the confidentiality of what now is, in some cases, very sensitive business information for these two venues. There were a couple of times that a venue declined to provide the information based on those concerns, and we were fine with that. I think they did stretch a little bit to try to help us understand how the business operates and the impact of this. So the working group is unanimous in feeling like the 20%, 80% category would more accurately reflect the business that is being done and be a more equitable way to apportion this. And the additional language that we proposed in an amendment about the non-passive activities just reflects the examples that are actually being offered at these venues. And one other question we did ask about for more detail was on the housing that is provided by each of these venues. And they are both providing considerable housing. It's over 50 units in each case, and it is affordable housing. It includes meals, and the salaries at the venues are comparable with venues that are not offering any type of housing or housing subsidy. We had discussed earlier and didn't come back to it whether to try to build housing into this resolution. We didn't feel it was necessary, but for context, if part of the reason to collect more occupancy tax is with the idea that we'll be able to do more housing and transportation and tourism, these venues and any other venue that might come to qualify are already doing a considerable amount of housing. They are cutting down on the need for transportation because it's on-site housing, and they are doing, they are center post in terms of tourism. So getting to a fair assessment of their tax liability is really important because they do provide those other benefits to the county directly instead of through a taxation mechanism.
So can you just tell me, you guys met today at the fine?
Yes, we did.
So, and we're all members of the group present?
Yes.
Okay, but you said before that not everybody has had a chance to review the answers to the questions.
The materials just got back to us last night and distributed this morning, so some of the members of the committee hadn't had a chance to really wrestle with the materials.
They're confident that it's ready to go for a vote?
Those that didn't get to see it are largely the ones that felt it was ready to go for a vote before. The committee didn't have a lot of questions, although one member did. And that member had got to look at the information a little bit and felt like there were answers in what was provided.
And can you just tell me, when were the questions communicated to the folks that were participating in the survey?
We sent this out last week.
Last week, and they got back to you in a week.
Yes.
And so it's August, so they've had 8 months to experience the tax, the hotel bed tax going up, and they don't have enough data to share with you whether.
They did share data. I'm just
how much of a change?
Scientist, and so when you show me data from 1 year or even 2 years, I just don't think we can infer a lot of causality. But I would, if the chair would allow.
I'm not ready to open it up to the floor.
The venues did talk about that, each of them, and so I think they can share that with the committee. If there were. One venue did report a decrease of, I think, 5% from last year, but it's not a large number of data points. So we asked because people wanted to know, but I cautioned that I think that it's hard to know the long-term effects of something that we just have 8 months of experience with. And there were contracts, I think, for each of the venues that were set in 2023 that carried on to 2024. That because the taxing rate changed, but the contract was set, the venue subsidized, but they wouldn't see any change in that until a year coming forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I have that right.
Okay.
And I would just say one further thing, which is that I didn't confirm today with the sponsor of this law, but previously the sponsor has been in favor of these amendments and has not questioned it that we would leave those in place. So I think we can, we have the sponsor's tacit approval and prior approval to rely on in going ahead and making the amendments tonight and moving this out of committee.
Okay, Legislator Litz, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I was just going to say, there isn't much more I can add to that, except we did have our meeting at noon today, and there was one member that said they had not totally reviewed it, but the point was made that they have between 1 o'clock and 6 o'clock for at least 10 minutes to 7 to review it, and if they had any questions, they could come here or voice their opinion. We haven't heard any of that. Also, I'd like to add that as a point of order, I don't know what the statutory limitation is, but since this was postponed July 2nd without consent, I believe we have to move it to the floor. We don't have to move it this session?
Three months.
That's 3 months. So, but I will make a motion that we add the language in the amendment that was before you on local law number 1 of 2024, and that we also move it to the floor.
Second.
Better make that two different motions.
Yes. So, well,
26.
A motion to amend the proposed local law.
Yes.
As presented.
As presented.
Motion.
That's what I said. Is it so? Just let him get a vote in between, and then you can do the second one.
Okay. All in favor of the amended resolution as
aye.
Presented?
Aye.
Aye.
What was the vote on the amendment?
The proposed local law is amended as presented 5-0.
5-0.
And now.
Now you need to make a motion.
I'll make a motion to move the amended.
To adopt the resolution with the local law as amended.
Local law number 169.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
And I'm not, no.
It is adopted 4-1.
4-1.
Okay, and so the clerk will have to reach out to the sponsor of the resolution to confirm that they are okay with the amendments made. Otherwise, no, you're not.
Legislator Joe Maloney and Legislator Litz.
You signed on as a co-sponsor. This is Legislator Maloney's resolution, as you and I previously discussed.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on, resolution number 428, appointing member and alternate member to the Ulster County Planning Board for the Town of Plattekill, Department of Planning. This resolution appoints Ernest R. Vandermark as the representative and Darlene Eisenhart as the alternate to the UC Planning Board of the Town of Plattekill for a term ending December 31, 2026. Does anybody have any questions? Is there a motion to adopt the resolution?
I'll make the motion. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Great. Resolution number 429, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to amend the 2024 Ulster County Operating Budget Office of Employment and Training. Revised backup has been provided to the committee to reflect the 2024 funding allocation. Previous backup was for 2023. Resolution is presented with an amendment to reflect the correct amount. So this resolution needs to be amended as presented with a total of $689,082. Is there a motion to amend the resolution as presented?
I'll make a motion to amend the resolution as presented.
Thank you.
I'll second
it. A second. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Great. And now we need a motion to adopt the resolution as amended.
Motion. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Great. Thank you. And I don't know where the confusion was with the backup, but there was some weird numbers.
So this is our funding for our youth employment program from the state. And the state issues LCMs, which are letters of commitment. We did not have the updated LCM when the original resolution was presented.
Mm-hmm.
So to put in an approximation, it was based upon the previous LCM. The real LCM literally came in 3 days ago.
Okay.
So that was the cause for it. So what you are seeing is the actual dollar amount that we will receive in additional funding for our youth employment program.
Great. And so I also noticed that we're going up in the amount of funding we're getting.
We are.
Is there a correlation with the success of the program, or is it just that there's more money available through the state funding?
So I'm going to say yes.
All of the above.
All of the above.
Okay.
In reality, the goal from the state was to create a year-round employment program for young people between the ages of 14 and 20. And it wasn't until the new budget was approved that they could confidently say we are moving forward with that idea. So we received the primary funding from January to June. Are always added funding for summer youth employment, and now we are going to continue youth employment in the fall from September to December based upon this new allocation.
Great.
Hopefully to continue that until June 2025.
Great. Any thoughts or feelings about how the summer's program is going?
So far, well, this is the last day of the summer program, and it has been a success. We placed 130 young people in work sites, which is an increase from last year. And with the new year-round program opportunity, we will now probably have young people who will then just roll over into their continued employment in September and take that around. The bad news, if I could say there's any bad news to this, with young people rolling forward, it means the opportunity for additional youth or new youth will now decrease.
Yeah, okay.
So we're sort of weighing both sides,
mm-hmm.
The economic sort of stability for some of the young people, but then we're going to limit the number of young people who will then be able to have the positions. So we are working to see if there's a way that we can ensure they have long-term employment, but ensure that it's not so long-term that we're not able to continue to offer it to as many youth. So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
The retention component is very valuable.
Right. Yeah. It is. Retention is valuable, but with retention means no opportunity for new. And each year, as the next generation of 14-year-olds appear, we want to be able to provide them with that work experience,
right.
And that will now be limited because of all of those that we've retained 15, 16, 17. So.
And do
you, good problem to have.
Yeah, I was wondering if you have any kind of feedback on like the sectors that they're working in, or is it like mostly tourism, hospitality, whatever?
It is very little, I will say to you, hospitality and tourism for the teenagers. It's a difficult thing for them. A lot of local camps.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot that are working within the county in different departments like DPW. We've had young people who are working for the YMCA. So it's broad, more human service positions for most of the young people, as opposed to, let's say, hospitality, tourism, or manufacturing. Again, difficult to get youth into those positions because they're not eligible to do that work.
Right.
Right. They can't do that. Now, as they become 18 and potentially move out of summer youth employment or youth employment, we do have our young adult employment program, which treats them more like an adult, and they can take on adult responsibilities. So we can put them in other roles that we may not have been able to do for summer youth employment.
Wonderful. Great. Thank you for the update. Okay, so that was resolution 429. We're all good with that. Thank you. So resolution number 440, authorizing the Ulster County Executive. What did I do? Oh, I did. Thank you. Resolution number 439, amending the 2024-29 capital improvement program, establishing capital project number 704, Golden Hill Solar Project, amending the 2024 capital fund budget, Department of Planning. In a moment, I'll ask Director Doyle to give us an explanation. But a reminder, resolution number 381 was adopted in August 23, authorizing the chair to execute an agreement with New York State DEC to accept $1,684,980 in Climate Smart Communities Program funding. Resolution 381 states that the Golden Hill project developer has agreed to provide matching funds and oversight of solar installation to fulfill the grant agreement. Resolution number 382 was adopted in August 2023, authorizing the chair to execute various agreements, climate change mitigation easement, maintenance and operation agreement, solar power purchase agreement, development services agreement, DSA, and the memo provided as backup to resolution 382 for solar equipment stated. So, Director Doyle, do you want to give us a little more background?
It's a great summary, and it does basically name the resolutions that we cited in the amendment. What I would say is given that what this does essentially establish the capital project, so it's actually paid for it. That's what ends up happening.
Great.
I would also add that there's a match here. There's a 50% match. That is being matched by Penrose itself. So the county's not required to match
them. Okay. Legislator Hewitt.
Is that the line that says construction?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Legislator Litz. A motion to move the resolution.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Resolution is adopted.
You're an aye?
I'm an aye.
Okay.
Resolution number 440, authorizing the Ulster County Executive to execute a contract with the New York State Environmental Facilities Corporation for funding for the implementation of septic system replacement program, amending the 24 Ulster County Budget Department of Planning, which this amends the 24 budget to accept $300,000 in New York State Environmental Facilities Corporation septic system replacement program funding. Any questions?
Yeah.
Yes.
What are the eligibility requirements?
So One is, this is an allocation of funds. So even though we applied for a grant, there was an allocation. The allocation of funds is for specific areas in the county. The first thing you have to do is be a tributary or a stream or a water body which within those areas. Generally, there are areas that have problems with respect to contamination from septic systems. And then that's the first one. And think of this as Walk Hill, Rondout Valley, it's tributaries to that, ponds, et cetera. And then into the watershed itself is also eligible, although the state of New York, the city of New York has its own septic program within the watershed. That's the first one. The second one is your septic system has to be within 250 feet of those streams or tributaries. And the third one actually has to be failing.
That's our goal. Explain it.
So what ends up happening is that the county would be, we would be responsible essentially for reimbursing the homeowner for fixing the failing septic system. So what we have to do is, and it's a maximum of $10,000. So it's a one-for-one match. So if they spend 20, they get 10. If they spend less than that, they'll get the one-for-one match on that. It's a reimbursement program. We have to basically go out and make sure that one, that the system is failing, that it's certainly eligible, that meets the eligibility requirements, that it is failing. And then we have to make sure that the design is okay, and we have to go through the necessary work in terms of make sure that the work is okay. What that means is that there is a difficulty here with respect to how we're going to implement this program, right? What you're running into is essentially that the departments that would normally be responsible for this are at capacity. All right. So what ends up happening is when you look at this, we may A, turn to the Soil and Water Conservation District to help us out on some of these, and Jacob been kind enough to agree to that work. We also may end up turning to essentially a third party to have a third party come in and do that necessary inspection work and the inspections and also the indications that the system has been fixed correctly. It sounds simple, but it's not. And it's going to take some time and field work to do that. Clearly, the planning doesn't have the staff to do that. Health department has indicated that they don't have the staff to do that, so we're looking around to try to figure out how we're going to implement that.
Yeah, our understanding is that we would help with the determining if the system has failed through fluorescein dye tests, but we have to get Department of Health guidelines how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And personnel.
We're getting one August 19th.
Legislator Corcoran.
So with the Board of Health helping out, are they able to get to those spots? Do they have cars?
Sure. So the short answer is the Board of Health is not going to help out.
Because they still don't have cars.
Poor now,
but. August.
Joe.
Yes. Do you know how many approximately systems can be replaced?
Well, if it's 10,000 systems and everybody takes the most, then it's 30 systems, obviously. It's $300,000, so then it would be 30 systems.
Thank you.
There is no administrative funds associated with this. So if there's need to be a third party, we'll find money in budgets in order to get that third party to do that
work. Yeah, the district's willing to devote 8 personnel hours a week to assist with this.
Great, thank you. Any other questions? Go ahead.
How does the general public be made aware of that?
They already know.
They already know? Okay.
If you have a failing septic system and you think that you need this to fix it, they're already calling. They're already calling. But the short answer is we'll do a brief outreach on that, but they already know. And we have a Participate Ulsters project, a page that we can use to essentially allow them to do that work and already know. But the intake work and the vetting work and stuff like that is not going to be easy, right? And we are able, I think, to copy some of the program work that's been done in the watershed with respect to this. So they have a lot of forms and guidelines, et cetera, but we haven't developed those yet.
Okay. Amanda?
I was just going to add on and say that because it is so geographically prescribed, we can do also some very targeted outreach around that.
Yeah.
Great. Is there a motion to adopt the resolution?
Did I move it?
No.
If not, I will.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. So the resolution number 440 has been adopted.
Moving on to resolution number 441, I spoke to the sponsor of this resolution earlier today, and he would like for it to be postponed to make some amendments to the resolution. So we'll be seeing that again next month. Okay.
Motion postponed.
Oh, sorry.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Great. 443? All right, so next is resolution number 443, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 9 of 2024, a local law providing real property tax exemption of the county portion of the real property taxation and special ad valorem levies for the creation of new accessory dwelling units in accordance with New York State Real Property Tax Law Article 4, Title 2, Private Property Section 421P2 to be held on Tuesday, September 17th, 2024 at 7 p.m. Any questions? Legislator Hewitt?
I just wanted a little clarity, Director Doyle. I heard two different things about the accessory dwelling unit designs. You said that they won't be available to everyone in the county, but I heard County Executive Metzger say ADU designs would be available to everyone in the county.
So we had a design competition that was run by the city of Kingston, right? The architect has essentially indicated that for the city of Kingston, those designs would be available, right? The architect may or may not make those designs available to the other areas of the county. And even if they do, the building departments in those areas have to accept them. And we don't have that agreement. We have the agreement with the city of Kingston that they would accept those designs. So, but we don't have the agreement essentially that the other would do. And the architect would have to essentially sign those documents. And so the short answer is yes, they are available, but maybe a cost associated with it that's not associated with what's going on in the city of Kingston.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Any other
questions? We're both right.
Yeah, good.
Is there a motion to...
Yeah, it's just a public hearing.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you, there's been some pushback by the towns. So they can come and talk.
Mm-hmm.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Great. Resolution number 448, approving the work order with the Dormitory Authority of the State of New York, DASNY, for the design, testing, and construction for Burroughs Hall window replacements related to capital project number 486, window replacement project, and amending the capital fund budget to SUNY Ulster.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Next. Resolution. Is there anything you'd like to add? Torsa.
Here. Question.
Yes.
Just look at all the knowledge you've gleaned.
Wow.
All right. Resolution number 450, approving the work order with the Dormitory Authority of the State of New York, DASNY, for design, testing, and construction services for Burroughs Hall roof related to the capital project number 489 campus roofs, Ulster County Community College, and the amending the capital fund budget, SUNY Ulster.
I'll move it.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Great. Resolution number 452, approving the work order with the Dormitory Authority of the State of New York, DASNY, to provide the construction services for Vanderland Hall doorway replacement related to the capital project number 493, door replacement and amending the capital fund budget, SUNY Ulster. Questions? I do have a question. So, who's paying for the SUNY Ulster construction projects? It looks like it's a 50-50 split between the state and county. Yes, is that correct? Okay. So when do you expect for the contract for the work and the work for the capital projects established in June?
So for this particular work order, the project design start date looks like February of 2025.
Okay.
So it's farther out, and the completion date would be in August of 2025. The construction start date for this particular project is March
excuse me, May of 2026.
Okay.
So we really get out ahead in order to get all of the approvals between DASNY and the state and funding.
Okay.
We're going to have more contractors than students.
I was going to say.
All of this going on.
Yeah. It's important work for us, you know, where those critical infrastructure.
For sure.
You are informed of work.
Yeah, I was, because I think that there's been a lot of resolutions coming through here for SUNY Ulster about construction work, and I was wondering if it would be possible to give us like a little kind of dashboard of like, of like what is in the pike and, you know, anticipated start date and end date and that kind of stuff, just for us to have for reference.
Definitely do that.
Okay, thank you, because I've lost track.
I'll second it.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Great. That was 452. Any forthcoming resolutions that anybody wants to talk about? Okay, new business?
I just want to mention nonprofit organizations and our economic development department and what we've learned through COVID and ARPA funding. One, how crucial nonprofits are to our county and how they don't pay taxes because of the benefits that they're bringing to our region that government can't necessarily fulfill. And we also learned that our county doesn't really know how many nonprofits we have in our county, or we don't really have enough information, in my opinion, about these nonprofits. So I would like to recommend creating a nonprofit registry for the county, a voluntary registry, where legislators like me who donate every year to nonprofits can go to this registry and make wise choices about keeping my donation money local.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure how to do that, but I'll be talking to Jay about it.
Great.
Thanks.
Sounds good. Any old business? Okay, is there a motion to adjourn?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Great. Have a nice life.